Here at the Savvy Traveler, we know a woman named Manisha Arial, who grew up in Nepal in the shadow of the world's highest mountains, the Himalaya. Manisha's forefathers worshipped these mountains as the abodes of gods and goddesses. But unlike so many adventure travelers, they never felt the need to conquer them. Neither did Manisha. But a few years ago, she began feeling the need to discover them. But how does one go about getting to know a mountain over 25,000 feet high? Or a cluster of ranges that stretch for thousands of miles? Manisha finally decided that her first introduction to the mountains would be from the air. So she begins her quest with a flight to Mount Everest.
I wonder if the deities my ancestors believed live on these mountains ever tire of droning planes that ferry tourists in their bellies. Does it disturb their slumber? Do gods sleep late? I look at the printed profile of the mountains the pretty air hostess handed me when I boarded. They look like a child's sketch, pyramids lined up in a row. How am I going to be able to tell one mountain from the next, I wonder? We've left the runway and the plane is gaining altitude. As we leave Kathmandu Valley's ancient temples and stupas behind, Snow White Peak starts to unfurl to the left. We're at 13,000 feet and still climbing. I ask the person across the narrow aisle if this is his first mountain flight.
Well, I've taken several of them, from Kanchenjunga to the far west, from where you can see Mansarovar in Tibet. We've even taken that flight. It's marvelous. This is the first time in the evening.
This is my first evening flight too. My first mountain flight, I explain. When the rays of the setting sun reflect off of the snow, he says, it bathes the mountains in a glory of light and color.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, good evening. This is your captain speaking. Far towards the west, you can see the Annapurna Range. Then comes Banaslu and Ganesh Himal. Then Langtang, Dorje Lakpa, and Furvigachu.
If all the mountains in the Himalaya were given gender, Langtang, with its elegant ridges, would be a lady. Of all the mountains, I have to confess Gauri Shankar is my favorite. The delightful pinnacles that cap the mountain, named after Shiva and his consort Gauri, evokes the image of a woman on her lover's lap.
Shortly, you'll see a small cone-shaped peak. That's Tohori. Then comes Lhotse and Lhotse, and behind you can see peak of Everest.
The sun is about to set. There's a filmmaker among the passengers, shooting a promotional. The pilot tells me he'll make as many circles around Everest as is needed to capture it on film. I sit back and think of all the wars men have fought over centuries, prophets born over ages, and civilizations come and gone, to imagine that these mountains have been here all along.
Below the wingtip approaching, you can see a small peak.
Imagine yourself in the front seat in a moving theater, a visual documentary unfolding right in front of you. Everest, Chomolungma, Sagarmatha, the one whose forehead touches the sky. As it floats on a sea of clouds, the harsh peak that has swallowed so many accomplished mountaineers looks almost benign. We circle Everest five times, and I see the most dramatic change of colors. As we approach from Kathmandu, Everest has loomed over others, dark, angry, and dangerous. As we make our first loop, the rays of the setting sun soften its harsh lines. The mountain starts to light up, and by the time we make our third loop, Everest looks as if it is made of burnished gold. Then the sun dips and disappears over the horizon, and the entire range turns silver. Just as we're completing our fifth loop, the sky starts to turn gray. The mountains that had displayed so much power, so much character, turn into a shadow of themselves, and then darkness.
At this time, please check your personal items brought on board.
From the skies above the Himalaya, this is Manisha Arial, the Savvy Traveler.
Once again, we would like to thank you for flying with Buddha Air. We hope you had a pleasant flight. Thank you.